In 1960, some young African American activists organized the Student Nonviolent Coordinating Committee, the SNCC. How do you think this helped the struggle for civil justice?
The SNCC, as it was known, was founded in 1960 by black and white students, mainly from the North. Their original goal was to speed the desegregation process. Mm-hmm. In 1964, they sponsored the Mississippi Project, which 800 young volunteers, black and white, to help thousands of blacks to register. They came south to help thousands of blacks to register and vote in the state of Mississippi. Stokely Carmichael abandoned the policy of nonviolence and white involvement. He called for black power. That's a familiar sound some time ago. Mm-hmm. And Carmichael resigned as leader of SNCC. His successor was H. Rapp Brown, who was just as militant as Stokely Carmichael. The original SNCC was good and very helpful, but the militant element of this organization almost destroyed the whole movement. Mm-hmm. Dr. King talks at length about this in his book, Where Do We Go From Here? Chaos or Community, which was published in 1967. Sit-ins was a program instigated by the SNCC organization.
What were some of the voting rights of 1965 when Lyndon B. Johnson was in presidency?
The Voting Rights Bill was signed by President Lyndon Johnson August 6, 1965, in the presence of scores of blacks and white leaders from throughout the nation. The bill was designed to put the ballot effectively in the hands of blacks in the South after 100 years of denial by terror and invasion. The bill was an outright growth of violence in the Selma March. Remember the Selma March that was that triggered the voting right. The right of Negroes to vote was clearly stated and is still clearly stated in the United States Constitution. Mm-hmm. The 13th Amendment freed the slaves. The 14th Amendment gave them citizenship. The 15th Amendment guaranteed the right to vote. But fear and intimidation kept blacks from the polls. The Voting Rights Bill was supposed to remedy the situation. The Constitution guaranteed blacks, but obstacles like owning property and poll tax and other scare tactics kept us from voting. I didn't register to vote myself until I was discharged from the Army.
Oh, really?
Yeah, that's right. I was when I came to.
Yeah. And was it true that black men, they got a chance to vote before black women, right?
No. Blacks.
Oh, really? Okay.
Mm-hmm.
How did you feel about Republican Richard Nixon's accusations that the civil rights leaders' actions were those of hoodlums and terrorists?
Well, you hear that from Malcolm X. It was very unfortunate that President Nixon would make such a derogative statement relative to our civil rights leaders. None of them fit the description he stated. They were just pointing out the wrongs of our society and trying to devise peaceful solutions to a very touchy problem. President Nixon has the unpopular distinction of being the only United States president to be impeached for his part in the infamous Watergate break-in of the Democratic Party's headquarters in Washington, D.C.
Mm-hmm.
It would appear that Nixon himself fit the description of hoodlums rather than our civil rights leaders, mm-hmm. having holding the unpopular distinction of being the first United States president to be impeached.
What are some specific parts of Dr. King's speech do you think really reached out to you the most?
That was a very difficult question because it looked like everything he said reached out to me. But I hope, you know, he said something like this, and I hope the day will soon come when all of our children, black children and white children, will be judged by the contents of their character rather than the color of their skin. I thought that was nothing. Now, on the subject of black power, in his book, Where Do We Go From Here? Chaos or Community, Dr. King makes this observation, and I quote, "This is no time for romantic illusions and empty philosophical debates about freedom. This is a time for action. What is needed now is a strategy for change, a tactical program that will bring the Negro into the mainstream of American life as quickly as possible. So far, this has only been offered by the nonviolent movement. Without recognizing this, we will end up with solutions that don't solve, answers that don't answer, and explanations that don't explain."
What were some of the hardships that you had to go through during this time?
That was easy.
I know, a lot.
First of all, I went to school in Fairfield. Mm. And to get to school, I walked past Inslee High School, which was all white. Mm-hmm. I walked past Fairfield High School, which was all white, to attend the Interurban Heights Industrial High School. Even though it was called Industrial High School, it didn't have any industries there.
Mm-hmm.
Uh-huh. Public transportation or streetcars. Negroes sat in the back with a board separating us. If the front section of the cars were crowded, then we would pass our money to the conductor, walk to the back, and get in rather than go past the whites.
Mm-hmm.
And then sometimes, believe it or not, sometimes before we could get back, they would close the door and pull off.
Really? And leave you out
there. Leave you out there, having paid our fare.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes, yes, I said, you could just pull off.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember getting off the train in Birmingham after I had spent 3 years, 10 months in the United States Army. I got off the train, and obviously I wasn't watching. I started up the ramp that had been reserved for whites. Mm-hmm. And one white man called down and said, "Where you going, nigga?"
Really?
Mm-hmm. And I had seen
go around.
Mm-hmm.
So I guess, did they ever mess with you when you had to walk past the white school?
No.
No,
I don't remember any encounters of having passed the white school.
Okay. Did you join in on the march in Montgomery, you know, the Birmingham movement? If so, how was it?
No, Michelle, I didn't take part in any of those movements. I wasn't one of the troops that took part because I didn't feel at that particular time that I was nonviolent. I didn't think.
Well.
and I didn't take part in the Montgomery march for the same reason.
Mm-hmm.
And I have utmost respect, of course, for those who did, mm-hmm. because they did bring about a change as a result of their participation.
They went through a lot.
They did. Mm-hmm.
Okay. Do you agree with Malcolm X when he stated African Americans made a greater sacrifice than anybody who's standing up in America today?
To some degree, I must agree. You must remember that the Native Americans, though, that's taken that as the Indians,
mm-hmm.
who were here when we got here,
mm-hmm.
Indians, made and are still making a great sacrifice. When white settlers came to America, they found the Native Americans here.
Mm-hmm.
And they forced them off out of their homes, forced them to live on reservations as they do now. And that is their plight today. African Americans, although we are stigmatized and ostracized, we are not forced to live on a reservation. We do have it.
Mm-hmm.
We have suffered being taken from our native Africa and sold into slavery. The children taken from their parents and sold into slavery like cattle.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Husbands taken from their wives, wives taken from their husbands. And with all of these indignities, we have suffered, no doubt about that.
Mm-hmm.
But I guess we can agree with Malcolm X when he says African Americans have made a greater sacrifice than anybody who's standing up in America today.
Well, Kristen, you talked about the right to vote that was given to the blacks as a result of the Civil War. Mm-hmm. Would you please comment on that?
Okay, I'd be glad to. The United States Constitution, now that we had a preamble, I'm sure you're familiar with the preamble. We, the people of the United States, in order to form a more perfect union, establish justice, ensure domestic tranquility, provide for the common defense, promote the general welfare, and secure the blessings of liberty to ourselves and to our posterity. Do ordain and establish this Constitution for the United States of America. The 13th, 14th, and 15th Amendments were the result of the Civil War that ended in 1865 with the North winning.
Mm-hmm.
And the 13th Amendment was added, that freed the slaves, was added January the 31st, 1865. And it states this: neither slavery nor involuntary servitude, except as punishment for crime whereof the party shall have been duly convicted, shall exist within the United States or any place subject to their jurisdiction. That was the one that freed the slaves as a result of the war.
Okay.
And number 14 gave them citizenship in 1866.
Mm-hmm.
And it says, all persons born or naturalized in the United States and subject to the jurisdiction thereof are citizens of the United States and of the state wherein they reside. No state shall make or enforce any law which shall abridge the immunities of citizens of the United States, nor shall any state deprive any person of life, liberty, property without due process of law,
mm-hmm.
nor deny any person within its jurisdiction the equal protection of the law. This applied mainly to former slaves, but the law was not enforced in the South after the withdrawal of Union troops.
Mm-hmm.
Mm. And then the 15th Amendment, which was added in 1869, the voting right.
Mm-hmm.
The right of citizens of the United States to vote shall not be denied or abridged by the United States or by state or by any state on account of race, color, or previous condition of servitude. Those are the 13th and 14th Amendments.
Mm-hmm.
13th Amendment freedom, 14th Amendment gave them citizenship, 15th Amendment gave them the right to vote.
Okay, well, this ends our interview. Do you have anything else that you'd like to add?
No, I would just like to say on behalf of our young people, particularly our black young people, that they would become more involved about the background of where we came from.
Mm-hmm.
We have gained many rights, but we still have a long way to go.
Mm-hmm.
And I hope that we don't become complacent
mm-hmm.
about these conditions, or even though there's some much improved over what the conditions were.
Mm-hmm.
I hope our young people will not become complacent and say we have arrived,
mm-hmm.
because we have not.
Okay. Well, thank you, Reverend Christie.